So, it's 1999, and my nerdy brain is in overload. Not just because I'm in high school and I'm 15 years old and in peak adolescence and my brain is overloaded with hormones. No, it's because there is a new goddamn fucking Star Wars movie on the way. The rest of the world is about to be caught up in what I've been caught up for literally my entire life, 15 years of existence, and they don't even know it yet. Lucasfilm has the cast under lock and key, I'm dodging spoilers like I'm fucking Neo in The Matrix, and literally counting down the days until May 19th, 1999. I'm actually watching goddamn MTV just to see if they play that Duel of the Fates video ever again. I've got the words to the song memorized. That shit is in Sanskrit, y'all. I cannot wait to see this movie, and I've avoided every bit of plot I can, and then, exactly 2 weeks before the movie releases in America, you guys aren't gonna believe this. Welcome back to Space Castle, it's your clubhouse for all things nerdy. My name is DT, and on May 5th, 1999, just 13 days before The Phantom Menace was released, this fucking kid named Isaac, who used to follow me and my friends around in high school at lunchtime, comes up to me and tells me that he got The Phantom Menace soundtrack the night before, and the third to last track on it is Qui-Gon's Noble End. Motherfuck, goddamn fucking bullshit. Now, was this Isaac's fault? Or was this the fault of Fox, Lucasfilm, and Sony Classical Records for putting a major spoiler on a significant piece of pre-movie release merchandise 2 full weeks before one of the most highly anticipated movie releases ever? Yes, it was Isaac's fault because he was a fucking prick who got off on messing with people and doing shit like that all the time. And I was actually really fucking happy when he moved away in my sophomore year. He fucking did that shit on purpose. But that's what I want to talk about today in this week's episode of Space Castle. Merchandise spoilers that have ruined things for us as nerds before we even got a chance to experience them for ourselves. Now, I wish I could say that Qui-Gon's Noble End, in semi-bold font, on the back of that glorious Drew Struzan artwork-adorned jewel case was the only time this has ever happened to me. That this was the most egregious example of merchandise spoilers, but alas, dear nerds, it is not. I didn't want to re-experience this trauma alone, so I felt the need to force others to dig up suppressed memories too, so I asked a bunch of people on Twitter and on the Space Castle Discord to share instances in their lives where merch spoiled something they were excited for too. So let's all deep dive into some of the worst memories of our lives as nerds. To kick things off, Super Laser Seth, one of the most prolific and insightful posters on our Discord, and my recurrent co-host on Real Junk on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@spacecastlepod, shared when Mask of the Phantasm was ruined for him by an officially licensed action figure, which was released before the film. If you're not familiar, and you absolutely should be, Mask of the Phantasm was an excellent 1993 animated film by the same writers and directors of Batman the Animated Series. Most of the principal cast, including Kevin Conroy as Bruce Wayne and Batman, Mark Hamill as the Joker, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. as Alfred, and many others reprised their roles from the cartoon in this animated film. It was actually just supposed to be a direct-to-video release, but Warner Brothers ended up giving the film a theatrical release. It ended up getting a lot of critical praise, fans loved it, and many considered it to not only be canon for Batman the Animated Series and essential viewing, but also the best Batman film to have ever had a theatrical release. And that's not hyperbole. It's really fucking good. It gives fans of the show an origin story for that version of Batman that we never actually really got in the animated series itself. How Bruce began his career as a vigilante torn between his vendetta against all the criminal elements in Gotham City and also being in love with a woman named Andrea Beaumont. Things don't go Bruce's way, as they tend not to do. Andrea leaves Gotham abruptly and she cuts off their engagement and Bruce falls fully into his Batman persona and his campaign against evildoers and so forth. A decade later, as Batman is now fully part of the daily life in Gotham City, a new player comes onto the scene and starts killing gangsters and other criminals. Obviously, this doesn't sit well with Batman, so he and this new character, dubbed the Phantasm, continuously cross paths due to their conflicting motivations. The Phantasm, we come to learn, has a vendetta against the Joker, which inevitably puts them at odds with Batman. Because if anybody's going to kill the Joker, it's going to be Batman, but Batman doesn't kill anybody as a rule, and he doesn't let anybody be killed in general. Unstoppable force meets an immovable object, or whatever. So both Batman and the Joker end up figuring out who the Phantasm is, but Unfortunately for Super Laser Seth and myself, and many other Batman fans around the world, we already knew who the Phantasm was because a goddamn fucking Kenner action figure featuring the character with Phantasm armor accessories was released shortly before the movie came out. So the mystery of who the Phantasm was, literally the inciting factor and source of intrigue for the film, was already known to all of us little nerds who plopped into our movie theater seats. And the Phantasm was Bruce's former fiancée, Andrea Beaumont. The Joker had murdered her father, so she was murdering her way up the chain to get revenge on him. That shit should have blown our young, impressionable minds. Batman the Animated Series was already pretty fucking dark and challenging, and I think a really brave interpretation of the character. It somehow managed to appeal to both adults and kids at the same time, and it's still to this day my personal favorite take on the entire mythology of Batman. But this movie, fucking Mask of the Phantasm, had blood. Can you believe that shit? And murders. And acts of violent vengeance. And the culmination of it all was deflated before it even had a chance so that corporations could make some more money leading up to that movie's release. And even though the movie is phenomenal, that's a damn shame. Next up, the 80s Movie Podcast responded on Twitter and threw their hat into the ring with a novelization of Empire Strikes Back, which actually came out 5 weeks before the movie's release in the summer of 1980. Edward Havens, who's an awesome dude and hosts an excellent podcast over there at the 80s Movie Podcast, chimed in and said that the reveal that Vader is Luke's father was handled as if it was no big deal, the novelization. And I remember reading those novelizations years after the fact. I was born in 1983, so the novel didn't spoil the film for me personally, but I did read the novelizations for both A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back in late grade school and junior high, both out of like curiosity and mostly boredom. neither are particularly well written. They both have really weird asides and strange jokes or tangents that don't really have anything to do with what's going on. Like Luke Skywalker hears mention of a duck and has no idea what a duck is. Like the novelization goes out of its way to point out that Luke doesn't know what a duck is. Or when the Falcon is about to blast off from Tatooine on its way to Alderaan, Luke suddenly remembers a dog he used to own. Like, it's just fucking bizarre. And weirdly sexual and objectifying towards women, especially Princess Leia, who for obvious reasons is the easiest target. We're told about, in both books, how women's clothing cling to their bodies in quote-unquote various intriguing places, and the Empire Strikes Back novelization actively works to trivialize Leia's inner conflict over her feelings for Han Solo. The book goes out of its way to make her emotions and rationalizations very, very childish and lame, and it totally goes against the wonderful, powerful life that Carrie Fisher's performance in the film gives Princess Leia. Leia is turned in the novel into a crazy, cliche woman who's not in control of her emotions, and she overcompensates by being an ice queen. It's pretty fucking misogynistic, honestly. But Edward over at that 80s movie podcast is absolutely right. The reveal that Vader is Luke's father is handled by the novelization very, very matter-of-factly, in both its delivery and in the text, and the fact that literally one of the biggest and most shocking reveals in a movie to this day was casually thrown out there in book form just a couple of months before the film was released. Imagine being one of the kids who read the book before seeing the movie and experiencing none of the impact of that moment in the film. There are people out there for whom, "No, I am your father," was fully expected in 1980, and it didn't knock them out of their seats and fill their heads with terrible what-ifs and dark thoughts on the way home. And that's fucking sad. It's like somebody handing you the Toys R Us receipt for all your Christmas gifts in November. We've got a few more moments to get to, but Goldblum, the Space Castle's onboard AI, is telling me that if I don't get to some messages from Earth, he's going to tell me a spoiler about how and where my story will end. So let's hear from some excellent indie podcasts, and then we'll get back to talking about our ruined childhoods.
I'm Edward October, and I'm here at the October Pod Ranch in the Great Smoky Mountains. Almost every night here, there's a ghost story party around the campfire. In my family, we believe that scary stories are best told around a roaring fire with a bottle of wine. That's why bold individualists everywhere choose Oktoberpod for their retro horror thrills. Our stories are so good because they're told with such care. Understated, moody, and above all, chilling. Why don't you join us for retro horror of impeccable taste? Choose Oktoberpod. Find us on YouTube or at OktoberPodVHS.com. OktoberPod, retro horror for bold individualists.
The The Needcast, your source for offbeat news.
Marauding monkeys bring fear to historic Indian tourist haven. These monkeys have gotten aggressive. Anytime you hold a package in their hand, they'll come up and they'll snatch it from you. Like gang members. Like, take your chain.
Oh my God.
Hot takes on sports?
Drew Brees is a legend. How dare you?
He is, but he's done.
No, he's not. You pardoned him. He's coming back.
He wants to pardon Drew Brees. I want to throw him in prison.
And deep dives into the paranormal.
The Loveland Frogman. At approximately 3:30 a.m., an unnamed businessman, the most credible witness maybe you can find.
Unnamed businessman.
I was just doing business when I saw a frogman.
Join us every Monday and let's talk some bullshit. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all your favorite podcasting apps.
And we're back. And speaking of excellent indie podcasts, our friends at Switch the Envelope dropped us a line on Twitter and shared that the Palpatine figure released prior to Revenge of the Sith in 2005 revealed that Palpatine and Darth Sidious were the same person. Fuck, like, what is it about Star Wars ruining these super secretive movies right in the home stretch before their releases? Jeff and Corey at Switch the Envelope are 100% correct, though. The Chancellor Palpatine figure in question came with Force Lightning accessories and even a goddamn Sidious head you could swap out. Now, I am personally of the mind that it was really obvious that Palpatine and Sidious were the same person in the Star Wars prequels. It was clear as day to me that any scenes with a hologram or an in-person appearance of Darth Sidious, it was Ian McDiarmid under the hood. But this is a franchise where all kinds of shit like clones and stuff come into play heavily, so there was a lot of speculation and guessing as to whether or not there was going to be some sort of a twist, like if maybe Palpatine and Sidious weren't the same person or something like that. And there was also the fact that the Emperor, as we knew him in Return of the Jedi, was all wrinkly and decrepit and yellow-eyed, whereas Sheev Palpatine in the prequels looked like a normal, older man. But alas, those theories were put to rest before anyone even got to see the movie, and we knew they were the same dude. So way to go once more, Lucasfilm, Fox, and Kenner. You made sure at least one major plot point was deflated before audiences even got to see the film for themselves. And just to add insult to injury, just 10 years later, we were all looking forward to Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. The trailers were really good. Many of us who didn't like the prequels were letting our guards down and getting excited. I was one of them. And one of those trailers ended with Finn, played by John Boyega, about to throw down with a villain, Kylo Ren, in a lightsaber duel. Everybody saw that viral video where John Boyega reacted to seeing the trailer himself for the first time. Anybody who wasn't already in love with him after seeing Attack the Block immediately fell in love with him at that point. And we were so super psyched for a former stormtrooper to maybe start down the path of becoming a Jedi and for a black dude to be the lead in a Star Wars trilogy. It was really, really exciting to see. And then the action figures for The Force Awakens started to land in stores. And as those lads over at Switch the Envelope pointed out to me on Twitter, the Rey action figure came packaged with Luke Skywalker's lightsaber. The very one that Finn wielded in that trailer. So that action figure struck two bad blows. One, it told us that Rey would be the hero to wield Luke's saber in the end, and that Finn, the character we were all excited to see, was going to be second fiddle. The only worst thing they could have done is put out an action figure with fucking Han Solo with a lightsaber stuck in his chest. And we come around full circle once again to Super Laser Seth on the Space Castle Discord, who mentioned the big twist in Terminator Genesis was ruined by pre-movie release merchandise as well. Now, if you haven't seen Terminator Genesis, well, just don't. It's a massive failure on most levels. It unintentionally pisses all over the incredible first film in the franchise. Rest in peace, Bill Paxton. And it largely doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it should have led to Emilia Clarke just firing her goddamn agent. So the movie is like, it's like alternate timeline Terminator shit. Which we should be used to by now. But for a movie franchise that's based largely in time travel and alternate timelines and shit, no one seems to be able to get any sort of grasp on it. So everybody knows the story of John Connor, his mother Sarah Connor, and his father Kyle Reese. So this is an alternate timeline where someone has sent a T-800, you know, the famous Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator, back to 1973 to protect Sarah Connor as a child. Sarah and that T-800 eventually come to destroy the original Terminator from the first original movie, and... you know what? Fucking... John Connor's a fucking nanobot Terminator. I can't put forth the effort to try and explain Terminator Genesis' plot, and frankly, I just don't want to fucking waste your time. it's a complete mess. It was directed by Alan Taylor, the same guy who directed Thor: The Dark World, and Terminator Genisys is so fucking bad that it actually makes me wonder if I'm the wrong one for liking The Dark World when so many other people didn't. So posters and stuff for the movie, and I have no fucking idea who would have bought this shit, revealed well before the movie came out that John Connor in this alternate timeline turns out to be a nanobot fucking Terminator and the actual villain of the film. It's a goddamn disaster. The only good thing to come out of that whole ordeal was an absolutely hilarious set of promo photos of the cast produced by Entertainment Weekly. Go to Google right now and look up Terminator Genisys promo pictures and your day will be brighter. Unlike the careers of Emilia Clarke and Matt Smith at that point in time. And that's going to do it for this episode of Space Castle. As always, it is your clubhouse for all things nerdy. Thanks so much for listening this week and reliving some painful childhood and adolescent memories with me. And a couple of shitty adult memories as well. Seriously, I'm never ever going to get over how badly John Boyega was shafted by Disney in the Star Wars prequels. I'm just not. I hope you all enjoyed this episode, though, and you can check out Space Castle's online home at spacecastlepod.com. There you'll find links to all the podcast episodes, YouTube videos, merchandise if you're into that, and even a link to our Patreon if you want to join up. In the meantime, I'm going to rediscover my happy place with some Oreo popcorn and an episode of Queer Eye on Netflix. Take care of each other, and be good.